This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. You're listening to Place to Be Nation's Main Event, a roundtable experience looking at today's pro wrestling landscape. And now, here's your host, Scott Criscolo.
Place to Be Nation, welcome to episode number 16 of your home for everything modern day wrestling, Place to Be Nation's Main Event. I am your host, Scott Criscolo. We got a great show for you tonight as we are on the post game, if you will, or the post week of SummerSlam, which took place this past Sunday evening from the Staples Center in Los Angeles. We have three of the core four here and a very special guest. We'll save him for last, and then he gets to talk first. All right, let's bring in the core three. He's the Bengal of the Bayou. He's going to have to take Daniel Bryan off his fantasy baseball team because he's going to have Tommy John surgery, and he won't be able to throw the changeup anymore. Mr. Andrew Reich.
What's baseball?
Yeah, you've never had that down in your neck of the woods, I suppose.
We have a minor league one called the Zephyrs.
But... The Zephyrs, which used to be, by the way, the Mets AAA farm team for 1 year when they were gypsies for about 5 years and bounced around from city to city. Reich, pleasure as always, my friend.
No problem.
Next up, a PTB original. Speaking of Tommy John surgeries, he wished all his closers had them because they all stink. But they're still probably better than most teams that we talk about on Extra Point, including the Yankees. Mr. Jordan Duncan.
I'd like to start tonight with an impression I've been working on since Sunday night. Mm-hmm. This is that child in the crowd at SummerSlam.
Let's go, Cena! Let's go, Cena!
I'm just going to do this throughout the whole show, if that's cool with you guys.
Oh, I felt bad for that poor bastard.
I know, that poor kid.
Poor little schmuck.
Was waiting for the comeback that never happened.
Because even all the women in the crowd were like, ugh, this is even turning my stomach.
Yeah.
JD, pleasure as always. We'll talk about that match and much more in a moment. Finally, the guy who counseled that poor little kid after the match... he is also a PTB original. He is co-author of The High Spot, and he's one of my favorite people on the planet, Mr. Steve Willey. Did you talk the kid down the ledge, Steve?
I did. We had a deep and meaningful conversation about his choices in life, and we won't hear from him again. And I'm also like, a fan of minor league baseball because, you know, my favorite team is the Cubs.
Steve, always a pleasure. And finally, our special guest replacing the ubiquitous Ben Morse, who is not with us tonight. This is a treat. I'm actually a fellow radio guy. I am a radio alum, as most people know, and this guy's still in the business. He's the executive producer of Felger and Maz and the baseball reporters on 98.5 The Sports Hub in Boston, otherwise known as BZFM, home of the Boston Bruins. And there'll be no It's a Wonderful Life jokes, and he is not going to Washington. Mr. James Jimmy Stewart. Jimmy, welcome to the main event.
As Bobby Heenan would say, you won't offend me with cash for this appearance.
We're waiting for the... Yeah.
Smell the and bacon. You can also throw in a producer of the AT&T hockey show. That'll be coming up here in October. I know you're a big
excellent.
Bruins fan.
So. Yes, excellent. The AT&T hockey show. Let's go Bees. Jimmy, it's a pleasure. Thank you for being able to join us.
Thank you for the invite. Place to Be Nation sent me a tweet. I responded to it. We coordinated through email, and we made it happen. And here I am sitting at my desk, Red Sox game on one TV and the replay of SummerSlam on the other.
Ah, yes. So you do. You can't afford the network, which is how much, guys?
$9.99.
Unless you're in Canada, and then it's $11.99.
And then if you're in Mexico, it's $30.
And that's all.
Are you guys going to renew this week?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we'll talk about that. Because I think that's a good subject to talk about tonight. After 6 months, everyone's thoughts. Maybe we'll talk about that later on in the show. Because
it's amazing it's already 6 months. Isn't it? That long ago where we were all madly sitting online trying to log in.
Oh, my God. That morning.
Put a credit card in.
That morning was sheer hell.
I was so happy because I got in like a half hour before they technically were allowed to. And it still didn't matter. Nobody could watch anything that day.
Well, I think we could talk forever about the first week of the network because it was just so crazy.
It's funny, yeah. JD, because I remember, what was it, 9 o'clock we were first supposed to be allowed to get on?
Yeah, and I got on at like 8:30.
Yeah, well, Justin had messaged me and said, oh, I'm on, Jordan's on. What do you mean you're on? What the hell?
I went on, and I tried to go on at like 10 of 9, and I didn't actually watch something until about 1:30. So, but those who use their credit card have gotten lucky, whereas those who use PayPal kind of got the had some issues a few months later. But
yeah,
we'll talk about the network in the next segment, because that's actually a good topic to talk about, as we are, for those that did sign up the day after the Elimination Chamber, we are at the six-month mark. So we'll talk about
plus. I apologize. I have to remember I am but a guest. I am not hosting. So my apologies. Or directing traffic.
No, no. That's
I will know my role and speak only when spoken to.
Trust me, my friend. I've sat in your seat. I know exactly how you feel. It's all good, man.
I got to say, you've got better taste than me if you're watching the SummerSlam replay, because I've got Impact going right now.
Ugh, and, I am not talking about it.
Okay.
So bad.
Oh, you know what? Let me know when Eddie Edwards and the Wolves come on, because then that's when I'll turn it on.
Okay.
I'm away from a cable TV, so I can't see it.
They'll be in WWE in a year. All right, let's dive in first and talk about what happened this Sunday at SummerSlam. Jimmy, I'll start with you. Let the rookie go first. General observations of the show.
I enjoyed it. People are saying that it was better than WrestleMania. I don't think it was better than WrestleMania. I do think it was the second best show of the network era. Brock Lesnar winning should have come to the surprise of nobody, even though on Twitter I'm very pro Cena, and during the show I'm very pro Cena. I like John. I get John. John is on the Mount Rushmore of WWE guys. 10 years on top is pretty incredible. I was surprised that they made Brock Lesnar look as strong. He dominated 95% to 98% of the match, which is great. I also think that Brock Lesnar should be a guy who holds the championship. I'm even going to say beyond WrestleMania 31, because I'm not a Roman Reigns guy. But back to the point of the card, the entire card, top to bottom, I thought was excellent. Again, second best WWE special event / pay-per-view of the WWE Network era here.
Okay, Rish, what'd you think overall?
Overall, the show was excellent. You know, the thing that's interesting about the match times, if you really delve into it, is that nothing outside of the last two matches went over even, I think, 10 minutes. But if you watch all the matches on the card, everything got time. Nothing was treated as a joke, not even Jack Swagger and Rusev. And everything had a plot, and everything had a first, second, and third act to their match. Even the five-minute match with Paige and AJ went really fast, and it was very exciting. Really no sore spots in the match. The worst one is probably Stephanie and Brie, and there was at least enough drama at the end to keep you interested. The main event speaks for itself. It was so different from what they did at Extreme Rules, yet it went in a completely different direction other than that. So, you know, you got Brock going on top of the world, and it seemed like a match where the whole was greater than the sum of its parts. And I agree with Jimmy about that. I don't think it was better than WrestleMania 30. I'm biased because I was there, but SummerSlam was really, really good.
Okay. JD?
Yeah, I don't think it was better than WrestleMania 30, but I do think it was maybe more unique, and that's why so many of us liked it, because it was different, you know? I can't think of a pay-per-view main event that I ever remember ending, you know, just a total squash. And that makes the match memorable. You know, good or not, that's the debate. Memorable, not a question. That's going to be one of the most memorable main events in a long, long time. I think Andrew said it right, too. You know, the sum is better than the whole of its parts, or if I say that wrong. But, you know, I couldn't point at one thing and say this made the show, but everything coming together, and it all seemed to click. Everybody did their job well. It was really enjoyable. And I don't want to bury the lead and go right past SummerSlam, but I think they followed it up the next night with a really, really good episode of Raw, too, which I think gives them a nice little bit of momentum going into September. But it was a really good show.
Steve?
I thought overall there was no real low moments of the show. The Stephanie and Brie for me was, you know, kind of, it was a little dull. It's not my cup of tea, but it was at least exciting to the crowd. But there was no real lull overall. It didn't really dip that far as in other pay-per-views or special events in the past. It was just everything was either average or above average. So when you got to the main event, you know, the two matches which really needed to deliver, in my mind, the main event and the Dean Ambrose-Seth Rollins matches, I felt that they did deliver. They were enjoyable and fun to watch. So that being said, it has to be an above average pay-per-view.
I like the fact that you're the only one of us that's trained to start saying special events. And the rest of us pretty much still call it. Well, I mean, technically they still are too. So
I will still drop a WWF every once in a while.
Oh, I do it all the time. Oh, I do it all. We all did it. My PIC, Mr. Azzaro, and I, when we do our vintage vaults on the Place to Be podcast, pre-2002, or pre, I guess, Judgment Day 2002, we were still saying WWF. That's the timeline.
I have yet to get the F out.
Well, let's hope a part-timer doesn't tell you to get the F out. By the way, I understand your Cena loved him because, I mean, Wes Newberry is right in your backyard, so I'm sure he's loved by, and he actually has a plaque. I don't know, Jimmy, if you've ever been in the, I'm sure you have, in the club at the Garden, at the Garden.
Oh, yes.
And
yes, I have.
All those plaques, and he's up there. I don't even think there's a Hogan plaque, but I know there's one of him.
I will tell you also that the crowd in Boston does not favor him very much. I don't know if that comes across on the shows or not.
Absolutely.
But there is the biggest volume of anti-Cena signs that I've seen in all the events that I've watched, and obviously I go to all the events here in Boston. I've never understood why the hometown crowd can't get behind the hometown guy. Like, it just blows my mind. Like, support the guy. He's from your hometown. He does everything that's right. It's a whole nother rant that I will go on for the next 90 minutes if you like, but I don't think that's conducive to our audience. Or your audience, I should say.
Yeah. Well, let's see. I've been at a couple of them. Were you at Money in the Bank?
I was at Money in the Bank.
Yeah, we were too. And I thought he got a decent pop when he won the ladder match.
That is one of the great stories ever told within a match, that when Cena came out, it was the normal kind of, hey, how you doing? Boo us. You know, Cena sucks. Let's go Cena chant. And by the end, when Kane is setting up the ladder, the crowd's like, no, we don't want Randy Orton to win. Oh, there's Cena. Oh, yay, Cena won. Okay, it's not Randy Orton, so we'll take it. We'll pop for it. It was, yeah. Oh, it was great storytelling. It was awesome.
The other pay-per-view I've been at in Boston was the 2008 Survivor Series when he won the world title, when they won the world heavyweight title from Jericho, when they were playing all those usual Cena back from injury vignettes, like he was blown up in Kandahar or something. And meanwhile, what'd he do, like break an ankle or something that the rest of the universe gets? I think those are the little things that irk us about Cena is they did. How many times have they done those come back from injury things for him? Like 12, and it's like, oh my god, he broke a pinky. Dun, dun, dun. Let's
well, it's not just that. It's that his absences are so short.
I know.
Yeah.
As we all know, John Cena has a very strong training program, shall we say. So.
Well, we've never actually talked about that here. But anyway.
He juices? Right.
You could never prove it, though.
He does juice. I think carrot apple and...
kale. Kale's
yeah,
big.
Yeah, kale juice.
And for the last year and for the last 10 years... The man has put food on Vince McMahon's table.
Yeah, love him or not, and that's my opinion of him too. And I gained a whole lot of respect for him after Sunday. All right, let's talk about some of the matches. Quickly, I know it didn't kind of really matter because on Raw he did get a win back, but did anybody get pissed that Cesaro lost to RVD? Did anybody care, Willie?
I was surprised. I didn't expect that at all. I thought that the reason that they were putting RVD against him when they're coming to the ring is like, oh, we can get Cesaro a win here and start building him back up. And the loss came.
Mm. Didn't really faze me. I mean, I was a little miffed, but
I wasn't miffed. It's just kind of like par for the course right now. I feel that he is still the guy that, you know, that they should go to with in Bryan's absence. But but evidently, I don't know what I'm talking about.
I don't think it's amazing because. He won that great battle royal, and then I felt like at some point between April and like July, he just kind of meandered off the path. And I think a lot of it was because, and I've criticized it often, and I talked about it on Monday on the Place to Be show with Scott Keith, and I've said it a couple of times here as well. I feel like the bookers have like 11-year-old attention spans. Like they need to focus on one thing.
One story at a time.
Yep. And let the others kind of fall where they may. And I think they focus so much on Brock Cena that the rest of the mid-card, and Stephanie and Brie, of course, that the rest of the mid-card kind of do whatever the hell you guys want.
I think that there's an interesting dynamic going on where I think Triple H is a Cesaro guy And I think Vince McMahon doesn't see the value in Cesaro. So I think that there's a, as you would call it, a battle of the bookers thing going on. I'm told that Cesaro didn't do anything wrong and that actually he's going to be a strong top of the card guy come, I guess, October, November, December as kind of a trial run. Now, I'm a big Cesaro guy. I loved his stuff in Ring of Honor under a different name, which we can't mention because he's WWE property. And I see more in Cesaro as this international villain than I do as, in Roman Reigns as this powerhouse good guy. I think Cesaro can just – he's got so many dimensions. And another thing to the Cesaro point is John Cena's best – handful of matches the last, I don't know, 8 months on Raw have been against Cesaro. So that to me says that John Cena wants Cesaro to do well and that Vince McMahon, the old man, needs to get in the Cesaro train and do something with him. This guy should be a main event guy. This guy at one point, I believe I read, was going to win Money in the Bank and cash in on Brock Lesnar. And that fell through and maybe we have to wait and see where he goes. But Cesaro should be a main event player. My opinion only.
Well, you know, you mentioned that Cena's best match in the past few months was with Cesaro. I think you could replace Cena and put a lot of guys' names in there, and their best match has been with Cesaro, too. I think, ultimately, Cesaro may be the guy who was hurt the most, besides Daniel Bryan himself, with the Daniel Bryan injury. Because I think we all remember hearing this, the rumors was Daniel drops it to Brock at SummerSlam, and then WrestleMania 31... Or I think it was Cesaro was supposed to win the briefcase, and Cesaro versus Brock was penciled in, and Bryan goes down, everything gets shuffled, and Cesaro's kind of the odd man out there, which is a shame.
I wouldn't want to say that Cesaro is in jobber status yet. I just think he's in sort of a holding pattern where they want him around, they have plans for him, like Jimmy was saying, in the future, but they just don't want to do it just yet. And I don't think his value has been completely depreciated by losing matches to guys like Rob Van Dam in a pre-show. I think he can bounce back from that pretty quickly. But everybody's right. His matches have been, I mean, excellent. I mean, the one he had with Cena right before SummerSlam, excellent. You know, the one with Sami Zayn to kick off NXT on the network. I mean, that's a match of the year candidate.
I think the whole roster's in a holding pattern. I don't think it's just Cesaro. Sure. I think they all are.
Yeah, but especially Cesaro.
Yeah.
Because they don't really have anything for him with Paul Heyman being put on Brock Lesnar. So now they just have nothing for him, you know.
Now, I think right now – oh, go ahead. Finish your point. Sorry.
No, I was just saying –
no, please cut him off. Everybody else does. Go ahead.
Now, go ahead, Jimmy.
What I was going to say is right now it looks like Cesaro is going to fill into that Alberto Del Rio spot.
Oh, Jesus.
The guy who get, well, yeah.
Make fire matches, no. Yeah.
But Alberto Del Rio was kind of the guy who got Wrestler X ready for the next guy. There's a fascinating story on Bleacher Report about the value of Alberto Del Rio. And right now Cesaro seems to be in that spot. Again, if what people are telling me things that are actually true and not just trying to, you know, mess with me and tell me things I want to hear, like Cesaro is going to be in the main event picture in the fall months and the early winter. So like you guys are talking about the roster's kind of in a hold. Well, it is the summer months and they kind of back off with things and they kind of heat people up right before the Rumble. So maybe I don't know. I hate to say I don't know, but it might be a wait and see, and you just have to be patient.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll see. I think we are being patient. I think Cesaro is going to get a push, but I think they just need to. I think they need to get the whole Brock thing out of the way, and now maybe they can, you know, kind of do something with something. But another guy who got a little shine on Sunday and kind of shocked all of us because we thought he was forgotten is your new Intercontinental Champion Dolph Ziggler, who stunned, definitely in my opinion, stunned The Miz. Thank God. JD, what did you think of this one? Did it shock you? It certainly shocked me.
Yeah, I did not pick Dolph to win. I kind of given up on them ever doing that. I thought it was a pretty good match, considering Miz was in there. But yeah, I think it's really good. I think Dolph deserves it. He's earned it. He's worked hard for it. The only thing I feel kind of bad for him is he finally gets that maybe a breakthrough win, even though he's been IC champ before. And everyone is going to forget about it because of the title switch at the end of the show, you know? So I hope it's not overshadowed going forward. But if Brock's not going to be around, then I guess technically in his absence, Dolph is the top title holder with Brock off TV. I don't know that they'll treat him like that, but it's nice to see them reward him with a win because he works pretty hard.
What do you think, Rish? Were you kind of shocked?
I was surprised, but if you watch the most recent weeks of television, Dolph has, like you said, gotten more shine. He gets, I think it was in like the last segment of SmackDown, not that long ago, with Dean Ambrose. He's definitely one of the top baby faces that they promote on the shows. I think winning that IC title for him was the WWE creative saying, I don't think they were saying, we back you, we believe in you. It was more like, we haven't forgotten about you. And I think the fact is that Dolph's in this workhorse type of role where I don't think he was something he was capable of a few years ago, where he can just go out and just have good matches all the time, you know? And I think that was missing in his resume. So I'm kind of looking forward to watching him wrestle different guys, like maybe Big E Langston and The Miz. And he's wrestled those guys a million times, but I think he can do that as the champion and put on really good matches on Raw.
So, I'm sure he'll keep it for a while. If they actually care, but
I actually think that they do care, because the secondary titles, if Brock Lesnar is only wrestling once a month,
thank you,
and they have to put emphasis on the secondary titles, and a Dolph Miz feud is good, and presumably they're going to do Sheamus and Cesaro for the U.S. title. These are now your main events on house shows. If Cena's going to be off, or if Cena's in a street fight with Kane, or Cena's with somebody else, like, you need one of these titles to main event your shows. So they should put more focus on it. And they love Sheamus. They have for a while. If Cesaro's going forward, hopefully that'll lead to something. But Dolph is, as you guys have put it, he's the workhorse. He's also somebody who the fans have rallied behind. Uh-huh. And if the Intercontinental Champion means as much as it did when I was growing up, when it was Randy Savage and Ricky Steamboat and the workhorse title, as it's been dubbed, then yeah, Dolph should be the guy, because Dolph is a draw. I don't know if the ratings on television prove it out or if the merchandise does, but in my mind, and he clicks as draw. So he should be the Intercontinental Champion. He should be the main event on your house shows. He should be a focal point of your television shows.
I agree with that, and he's a good worker, and he could work a boatload of shows, and he could be consistent. He's not fragile. He's only fragile when he faces Jack Swagger, who hopefully we'll never see again.
Everybody's fragile against Jack Swagger.
I do think it's surprising, though.
The in-house shooter.
Think it's surprising they just brought The Miz back, and he went. You know, it seemed like they're just getting this new character going, and he drops the title already. I thought that was kind of a surprise.
I think it took 2 months for Vince McMahon to figure out The Miz was back.
and that gimmick is like low rent Rock 2003, which I also
or it could be.
But that's what makes it good,
like,
man.
That Miz doesn't need the championship. Like the idea of the Miz gimmick, I like. I just don't know necessarily if I like the Miz with that gimmick. But if that gimmick is going to the moon as like Honky Tonk Man Light, then he doesn't need the championship.
I think he's kind of worn out his wrestling portion of his career. I think he's just better off as an ambassador. He's just better workers in the company.
If he was a manager or something, he'd be totally fine.
Yeah.
He should have Jerry Lawler's job.
Yeah, he'd probably be better at that too. All right.
You could tell his worth in the company when the announcers openly mocking him when he was doing the commentary the week before SummerSlam. He was standing on the table and you just see Michael Cole in the background just laughing at him and not enough laughing with you, laughing at
well,
you.
JBL ribbed him. He pulled the cable out of
his
waistbox.
Yeah, that was great.
And they were making fun of him before that.
And the sad thing is that Miz made Michael Cole a great heel, you know, 3 years ago, and now Cole's returning the favor by no selling him. How pathetic. My girl is now Divas champion again. The lovely, voluptuous Pale Page. She beat AJ. Two questions.
She's not really voluptuous.
Yeah, that's what I was going
to
say.
Fair.
No, she's not really voluptuous.
String
for, not to sound, not to sound too porn like. Dog.
Maybe for a British girl, she's voluptuous. I don't know. Jimmy, what'd you think of that? Are you a Page girl? Paige guy?
I love Paige. I loved her from day one. Me too. Watched a little bit of NXT with her as their champion. She's hotter in person than I think she comes across on television.
Really?
Yes. I was down in what they would call the media section of Money in the Bank, and really up close. Like, this is behind John Cena Sr., and she's spectacular in person. Two things on Paige. One is, I think this feud with AJ Lee has given her a lot more depth as a character. I think she came out with the great pop the night after WrestleMania, won the title, and then they were trying to establish her, and it really cooled her off. But this AJ Lee feud has given her a little bit of personality. And two is, with the Divas division as a whole, I think that when we watched NXT and we watched the match with Natalya and Charlotte, that gave me the idea that, why don't they make the Divas division the WCW Cruiserweight division? These girls can go, they can wrestle, they can be more than just beautiful women on your television screen.
Right. What do you think, Steve?
I'm excited about, to kind of go off of what Jimmy said, I'm excited about the future of the women's division for the first time, quite possibly ever, and that includes the Attitude Era, because of watching NXT and seeing people like Charlotte. And I've really become a big Sasha Banks fan, too. And then Paige and AJ up on the main roster right now, Natty going back and forth. I think they have some potential. And I'm not automatically wanting to change the channel when I see the Divas on, except if it's the Bellas.
Nikki's awesome. What a great heel turn. So believable. What?
Right, as she takes off her hat.
Yeah.
To let everyone know a minute beforehand what she's going to be doing.
Yeah.
Heels soon don't I will wear get physical.
When the E! Network is writing your storylines for you, that's what you get.
Yep, that's pretty much it. Is AJ, has she worn out her usefulness? Is this I don't consider this like she doesn't have the belt anymore. I guess I don't need her. She's gone. I guess Punk's not coming back, so to hell with her. I think it's just they want Paige.
No, I think this is the story they're telling.
Yeah, I think so too. Yeah. Anybody else think that? JD, do you think AJ's gone, or do you think this is just a title loss and she sticks around?
Title loss, she sticks around. They're going to keep fighting, too. That seems to be the story they tell with almost every feud now, is back and forth and back and forth. It seems like every feud now is a best of three. And so we're tied 1-1 right now. So, well, I guess more than that, because Paige got the initial win, but in the kickstart of the feud, the reigniting of the feud.
Right.
They're 1-1 now. So,
yeah.
No, AJ's not going anywhere.
The other awesome heel that came away with a win on Sunday was, of course, Rusev. And the awesome Russian—I don't know why I love the Russian national anthem so much because I hate communists. But hearing that is just incredible. And well, nobody really loves communists, Steve. So I don't need the whole condescending thing. Okay.
No. It was just the way you said it.
The way you said it's
like communists. It's like, yeah, you're right.
It's like not that communism's a bad thing. Yeah. I just don't like it.
Yeah.
Not that there's anything wrong with it.
It's egregious. No. Rusev is awesome. Jimmy, do you like Rusev?
Oh, I love him. I think that they made a major mistake that they seemingly are starting to recover from the battleground match. They made Jack Swagger look way too strong. And look, I get 100%. Jack Swagger is he's the in-house shooter. I get it. But Rusinov should be a killer. He should be destroying people until he gets to either a championship match or to John Cena or whoever that guy is that's going to slow him down. This guy should be, remember Umaga? And there was a number of people in the internet community who thought Umaga was going to beat John Cena for the WWE Championship at the time. Rusinov should be a killer like he was. And he looks the part. Like Hulk Hogan would draw so much money with this guy in the 80s. And I would go so far as to put him in a feud with Brock Lesnar at some point. And he just looks the part. He might not be able to wrestle worth a crap, but I think he can wrestle. I think he looks the part. I think he should be a main eventer for at least a few years. And they almost missed the boat with him and giving Jack Swagger as much offense as they did at Battleground. But I think they recovered nicely at SummerSlam this past Sunday. Mm.
JD, what do you think?
It's kind of interesting because I think where Rusev looked really good was in his selling, yet his character is a character that probably shouldn't sell all that much. So it's true. You know, he did really sell that ankle injury, and even the next night on Raw, he still he went and he kicked Mark Henry, and Henry blocked it, and Rusev started clutching that ankle and stuff. I almost get the vibe, and I do think they have plans for him past what I'm about to say. But do you remember in 98 WCW when it was Nash against Goldberg? They brought in Wrath for a little while and started building him up with that undefeated streak as well. And they had Nash beat Wrath to prep him for Goldberg. I almost feel like Rusev is Wrath in this situation, and Roman Reigns is going to go through Rusev en route to Brock Lesnar. That's what I think is going to happen. And I think that'd be an acceptable first loss, definitely, to have Roman Reigns be the guy that finally takes Rusev down. The match itself was pretty good, even though I don't think they knew until the day of what they wanted to do with a flag match, because I always thought a flag match was where you grab the flag. You know, that's what I thought. So yeah. I think maybe they realized, oh, crap, we got to figure out what an actual flag match is.
It kind of reminds me, you know, it's funny that this came up because it reminds me earlier in the week I was watching Super Brawl 1 from May of 91, and it was El Gigante and Sid Vicious in a stretcher match, and it was a 2-minute squash, and nobody used a stretcher.
Sounds
that's
good.
Gonna end well.
Yeah, at least it was only 2 minutes. I mockingly said on the recap with Will and Dylan and Chris Zellner that Swagger tapped like a bitch, even though he didn't tap at all. But
he just passed out.
In my eyes, he tapped like a bitch, so I didn't really care. I'm stoked about it too, but. Again, I'm going to say this over and over until the cows come home. Why has he not squashed Sheamus, taken the U.S. title, and turned it into the Russian Heavyweight Championship? That is a cake storyline to do right now. Just do it.
Yeah,
it amazes
it's
me.
It's easy because Cesaro and Sheamus are friends, and they're going to have a feud with each other.
And what a great feud that would be. Boy, they'll stiff the hell out of each other. I'll look forward to that.
And the return of the European title.
Woohoo! Yes.
But one other thing with the Rusinov character is that Lana could add a lot of more depth to this character. She should be a really working manager and can add that extra villainous element that Rusinov may or may not need.
And she's hot. That doesn't help. That doesn't hurt matters either. So.
Oh, it absolutely
helps.
She was
ugly. Nobody cares.
Right, exactly. But the point is that she as a manager, as a heel manager, could be doing so much more, and I just see her at ringside doing nothing. Like, what's the point? Advocates, managers, like, be active in you want your the wrestler you're representing to win. Like, it's such simple psychology. I mean, there's a point in the match where Zeb Coulter and Lana are almost like side by side.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, I noticed that too.
I don't know if she can clothesline Zeb Colt or anything, but
the problem with Lana is that she hits her spots, but she's not all encompassing as a character. She just looks for the camera and then you do your thing. But she's not someone who's always in the mode as a manager or as a valet.
Well, according to
you've got like 72 producers back there. One of them could teach her.
I mean, in Justin's eyes, she's the Mr. Fuji of modern day managers. So, all right,
get her some salt then.
Get her some salt. Yes.
And some mustache, shower sandals.
No. And a cane. No.
Shower sandals.
All right. I think a lot of people wouldn't call this a surprise match of the night, but it was really good if it wasn't so stunted at the end, was the Lumberjack match. Seth Rollins beating Dean Ambrose thanks to that annoying pimple on the ass of life, Kane. The loss does nothing for Dean Ambrose. Is he already bulletproof? Reesh, is Ambrose already bulletproof?
Not yet, but he's close. I think he's at the same point as like Daniel Bryan when he was coming on up and he won the belt from John Cena. I'm not saying that Dean Ambrose is WWE Championship material yet, but what happened with Bryan is that he won the belt and then it got swerved and taken away from him by the Authority. And I think he was in that position where they had to be a little careful with Bryan so that they didn't push him too hard so that the fans turned on him, but they didn't drag him down so that he didn't seem important by the time they got to January. And I think they're at the same position with Ambrose where they got to push him. They got to push him near the top with Rollins, especially with the WWE Championship out of the equation most nights, and have them feud in the premier feud, but don't have him lose to the point where people are just going to stop caring about him regardless of his character. But his character is money. And what makes it so great with Ambrose is that he not only does he embrace it, it is him.
Right.
You know, it's an extension of himself. And I was just watching that Shield special on the network that aired tonight, and it's phenomenal. And you could see how, you know, Ambrose and Rollins, the feud that they're having, it's not that far from what their strengths and weaknesses actually are. And I think that's what's making that feud so fun. And the Lumberjack match was so much fun because they're saying, well, they think we're going to do A, so we're going to do B. And so they do a Lumberjack match where they wind up all over the fucking arena, and the Lumberjacks can't keep them in there. So that is my feud of the year. I don't care about any other feud I've seen this year, but that is my favorite feud this year.
Jimmy, what do you think of the Rollins-Ambrose feud in general, and do you think Ambrose is bulletproof?
I think Dean Ambrose right now is your number two face in the company. He's the man right behind John Cena, and if John Cena goes away to bring it via satellite, then Dean Ambrose is your number one face, although Dean seems to be going away to make a movie too. It's one of the worst showings I've ever seen by a bunch of lumberjacks. I have to say, in all the years, like, what a fail by these lumberjacks. To the point that I watched the network documentary on the Shield, as you guys did too, and I was unaware of their FCW feud. So seeing some of that footage, it kind of makes sense that they would be having this type of feud and it being as good as it was. I think why fans connect with Dean Ambrose so much is he's gritty. He comes at you. It's the old Rowdy Piper line. I comes to fight. So he's walking that line of Pillman and Piper and this crazy guy who just comes and fights and just wants to fight. And he doesn't care if he wins or loses. He just wants to fight. And of course he wants to win, but if he doesn't, he's still going to show up unless he gets devastated into concrete. But he's got that intangible. You watch sports or you watch wrestling and you see somebody who has it. And you don't know what it is until you see it. Dean Ambrose, for me, has it. One of the things with Seth Rollins is I don't know necessarily if he has it, but he had to make this turn so that he wouldn't be the lost member of the Shield. Because we saw the personality Ambrose. Reigns is probably going to win the championship at WrestleMania 31. So Seth Rollins, they needed something to do. And Seth Rollins has an opportunity here to surprise me because I put him in that category as the lost member of the Shield. That's a long way of saying I hope we get more of this feud, and I hope we get at least like two or three more matches because the match that they had on Raw was the best match of Sunday and Monday.
JD?
He's not bulletproof, I don't think. To me, bulletproof is a guy you could put him in any situation, in the ring with anybody. He could win, he could lose, and he's going to come out still. Daniel Bryan was bulletproof earlier this year. They put him in a segment where he ran away with his wife from Kane, and he was still the biggest face in the company. That's bulletproof. Dean Ambrose is hot. The crowd loves him, but a few weeks of bad booking could undo some of that. I don't think they've done that yet, and we actually got into this in our Facebook chat a little bit. I think they need to be careful because they could fall into the trap of having him be the gutsy, scrappy underdog guy who fights hard and just never comes out on top.
Mm-hmm.
But ultimately, if he's a guy who fights hard and loses every time, he's a guy still a guy who loses every time. He's got to get some wins. I think he needs to win the blow off of this feud. But man, he's so good to watch. He's so fun.
And he really is.
Yeah, you know, I think what could hurt him is if they transition somehow in any way to a feud with Kane. Kane could kill a lot of his momentum, and I really don't want to see it.
Kane kills a lot of things.
Yeah, I think next to Heyman, he's the best guy on the mic right now in the company. My complaint about him maybe a month ago was his matches weren't up to par, and he's gone out and had incredible ones. And yeah, sure, they have gimmicks and ladders and tables and stuff, so maybe that protects it. But whatever, if they're using it to protect him, fine. You know, until he gets it, that's awesome. I don't think he's bulletproof yet, though. But I do think he's somebody that the fans are really digging. So I think that he's a bonus from the Shield split, because I think when they split up the Shield, they thought Rollins would take off. They had plans for Reigns, and I think they initially wanted to feed Ambrose to Rollins, and sure enough, they got another star out of it.
Mm. I concur. And of course, you know, we saw what happened on Raw. He's going to be out for a while.
Can I go back to that Daniel Bryan Dean Ambrose comparison for a second?
Yeah, go ahead.
I think that they beat Daniel Bryan for 7-8 months, and the fans realized that this guy was getting hosed and really caused the overhaul. So if Dean Ambrose is put in the Daniel Bryan situation, then he's going to come out stronger than ever.
True.
Maybe. Yeah. I think Daniel Bryan, though, had that. He always had that cult following, even from the day that he showed up on NXT, that the people who knew him said, this guy's the best wrestler in the world. And Dean Ambrose has a cult following, but not quite like Daniel Bryan did. And
close. Yeah, but
and
you
that
know,
cult following got loud. And if you get loud, the rest of the people will hear you and they'll start following your lead. And I think that's what really happened with Daniel Bryan, is the people who knew him all along really started that train rolling, and everybody else got on pretty quick. That could happen with Ambrose, but I just don't think he's the star. I'm talking before they got to WWE, he's not the star that Daniel Bryan was. Bryan Danielson was the name in the indies.
Kind of like Jordan. Punk 4 years earlier when he came in 2006. He was, everybody knew who Punk was.
Is that a product because they were part of Ring of Honor and Dean Ambrose was part of Cincinnati Wrestling and
Combat Zone and things like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it could be.
I want to make one point to Jordan, though, is that even though Dean Ambrose isn't the best wrestler, like Jimmy was saying, he's got the magnetism. He's got that wild card, it factor type of thing that when he comes out, it's like, ooh, it's Dean Ambrose. I want to see this.
Oh, yeah. It doesn't really matter if his matches aren't great.
Like when he came down in the, because we didn't talk about this one because we do it every 2 weeks, but when he came out in the birthday present, oh my God, that was hilarious. Because that could go over really badly. I remember when
I thought it was going to be Abdullah the Butcher.
Yeah. I remember when Randy Orton was feuding with Triple H and he came out the birthday cake and everyone said, oh, this is so fucking lame. Yeah. But this one, when he did it on Rollins, it was like, oh yeah, kick his ass. You know, like, people want to cheer Dean Ambrose.
Well, I made that point about the match quality because I think it's already been fixed. I think that complaint has already been resolved, I think. I can't remember who he had a match with. I think it was Del Rio or somebody. He had like a 15-minute match, and I was just kind of like, they went to the chin locks way too early, or maybe it was the Randy Orton match. And I was like, you know, it was okay, but it just didn't fit his character, and I think they've already resolved that issue. I think they've already figured out how to have his matches go.
You go buck wild. Yeah.
Yep. Yep.
I look at the pop that Dean Ambrose got at Money in the Bank, where they were starting the Rollins Ambrose feud, but when he went out hurt and they were chanting for him in Boston, like, that to me showed that he just needs a little bit more airtime and he's going to be their guy. And I still think that behind Cena, he's their number two good guy.
Well, and he main evented Run Raw on Monday as well. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a big deal.
If they do what I think they're going to do, and they main event Rollins and Ambrose at Hell in a Cell, that is going to rock the fucking house down.
Yeah,
oh, totally. And you where we have to worry about Ambrose is, what Jordan alluded to, is if he's not in a feud and he's not coming full tilt, his matches do get boring. And that was that did happen during his indie stint, like in Dragon Gate and stuff like that. If he is brawling, if he is going full tilt against someone, if he's battling outside of the ring, he's great. If he has to wrestle on main event, 12 minutes against The Miz or something like that, his style's not there yet. And he has not generally been a babyface throughout his career. He's generally been a heel. So he's going to have to adjust his offense. He's going to have to adjust his pacing to that. If he's fighting Rollins and fighting Kane in these blood feuds constantly, he's going to be fine. But if he is going to be the number two babyface, he's going to be in a lot of programming, and he's not going to be able to run full tilt like the Ultimate Warrior every single time he gets out. It's going to he's going to lose steam pretty quickly. Mm. So they're going to have to be smart about how they use him.
I think the smartest thing is to not actually give him a lot of matches, honestly.
I like the fact that he, even after winning, like, for some reason, the whole when he dumped the bucket and he said, it's for charity.
And it's then for he charity. Jumps him. And he throws tremendous. The bucket in his head, bounces it off his face.
Bounces it off his head. Yeah. Oh, my God. I saw a lot of that. Go ahead.
He's a douche. I mean, he seems like he's a douche in real life.
Yeah.
And he literally douched Seth Rollins.
Yeah.
Yeah.
By the way, somebody on Facebook posted on my newsfeed today, like about 3 minutes worth of failed bucket dumps.
Oh, yeah.
Like
great.
People falling off roofs. And why are people using their recycling bins? I mean,
on roofs?
Yeah, falling off. Like people are standing on their roofs doing it, and then they fall off their roof.
I made sure mine didn't fail. Face up, bucket down.
But there were like people dumping like their big. You know, they had to be from Connecticut because it was a big blue recycling bin, and you know, like those huge tall ones. Those are people
we have
who
them in Massachusetts too.
Yeah, there's oh, okay. Well, maybe it was. It could be.
You
Rhode
say
Island
they had
too.
To be from Connecticut because they suck at everything, right?
Pretty much, except me. All right, we're gonna take a break. When we come back, we will continue on with our SummerSlam recap and delve into the network a little bit because we are coming up on the first 6 month run. I'm Scott Criscola, Andrew Reich, Steve Willey, Jordan Duncan, and special guest James Stewart from 98.5, the Sports Hub in Boston. More after this. James, say because.
Because.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly from Ring of Honor Wrestling. Make sure you check out the Kevin Kelly Show each and every week. We'll be talking about wrestling in the past and wrestling today, plus be talking about all kinds of sports and pop culture, whatever's on your mind, too. We'll answer your questions each and every week. The Kevin Kelly Show, right here, placetobenation.com.
This is the king of old school, Steve Corino, and you've heard all the rumors, and it's true. The Steve Corino Show is here. We talk about wrestling. We talk about baseball, movies, television, anything you want to talk about. New guest every week. That's right, the Steve Corino Show every week here on the Place to Be Nation.
Hey, this is Bauer from The Bauer Show, sports and more. You can check out The Bauer Show podcast every Wednesday and Friday right here at placetobenation.com.
The Bauer Show.
Chad, do you hate it when commercials run and run?
What do you mean, Parv?
Oh, never mind.
Listen to Where the Big Boys Play on placetobenation.com and find us on iTunes. We are the only WCW Supercard exclusive podcast.
Looking for something different in your pro wrestling podcast? Look no further than the Pro Wrestling Super Show. Join me, Stephen Graham, every week as I'm joined by a rotating door of guests as we discuss a single topic each show, ranging from ECW pay-per-view reviews, wrestler snapshots, top six lists, and anything else you can think of. That's the Pro Wrestling Super Show every week here on the Place to Be Nation.
So you got the script, yeah? You all got it?
Yeah.
Oh, that sounds terrible. The Titans are wrestling. Oh, brilliant. Sorry. The Titans are wrestling off.
Pete, I'm a lead analyst for the show and breakdown matches.
Kelly, lead historian. I'm a jobber lover. Are you?
Johnny and I drink.
And yes, me, Bob. We watch old school wrestling and love it.
Titans of Wrestling.
You know you want to hear it.
What's going on? This is the Godfather, Nate Milton, with an offer you cannot refuse. Each and every week you can join Marcus Vanderberg, Big Nasty Alfred Kunawa, and myself on the Kings of Sport podcast, available exclusively on placetobenation.com, your one-stop spot for the best in sports and pop culture.
Hey, sports fans, this is Dr. G for Extra Point, Place to Be Nation's traditional sports talk podcast. Every episode, Scott Criscullo and I talk everything from the Big Four leagues to all the hot sports news with exclusive guests and analysts. Email us your comments and questions at extrapoint@placetobenation.com. That's the Extra Point, exclusively on placetobenation.com.
Hey, sports fans, Cowboy here. Make sure you make your weekly stop by the Sports Lounge here on placetobenation.com, where the boys and I tackle all the hot topics in the world of sports. We go behind the numbers and provide in-depth expert analysis on Major League Baseball, MMA, NFL, and more. The seats fill up quick, so grab your favorite cigar, kick back, and join us in the Sports Lounge, only on placetobenation.com.
In Rhode Island, and look for great food and a fun atmosphere, we'll be sure to stop by Bonehead's Wing Bar, 131 Washington Street in West Warwick, with over 65 different wing sauces and dozens of sandwiches, burgers, and appetizers. And a fully stocked bar, Bonehead's has something for everyone. Boneheads also shows every WWE and UFC pay-per-view, features live music, weekly trivia, and much, much more. So, be sure to stop in, tell Matt and the crew that Place to Be Nation sent you, and become a Bonehead today.
Hey, this is Rob Naylor. Do you still enjoy pro wrestling? Believe it or not, I still do. So you better join myself and Will on the Google Wrestling Podcast, exclusively at placetobenation.com.
Shit, I wasn't ready. Hey, this is Will. If you like listening and shit.
Hey, this is Will. If you like listening to guys talk about old school wrestling, follow me and Charles on Wrestling with the Past podcast on Place to Be Nation.
On Richard and the Mailman, we talk about life with great enthusiasm, which eventually leads to disillusionment and inevitably hopelessness. But don't worry, there's lots of laughs along the way. So check us out every week or month or whatever on Richard and the Mailman.
What's up, wrestling fans? This is Jeff Peck, and you can check out my wrestling podcast, The Still Real To Us Show, every Saturday right here at placetobenation.com. It is a wrestling podcast from a fan's perspective, and we're not doing it in our mom's basement. So check it out every Saturday right here at placetobenation.com.
It's still real to me, damn it!
Looking for new wrestling, sports, and pop culture voices? Head over to placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. We have an extremely talented staff that covers comics, video games, and all facets of entertainment. Our sports coverage spans all the major professional and collegiate sports, including MMA. Our fresh takes on professional wrestling are some of the best on the internet. Also, be sure to check out our friends at thehistoryofwwe.com, prowrestlingonly.com, Scott Keith's blog at rspwfaq.net, and piledriverwrestling.net.
Welcome back, Place to Be Nation, to episode 16 of Place to Be Nation's main event. I am Scott Criscolo. Joining tonight, Steve Willey, Jordan Duncan, Andrew Reach, and
Cena.
Clap, 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 clap. Steve, don't you have any Ritalin for that? Or what's the opposite of Ritalin that you give kids?
Wine.
Oh, there you go.
Jesus juice and Michael Jackson.
Scotch. And also joined by our rookie of the group and hopefully returning, James Stewart from 98.5, the Sports Hub in Boston. And
hi, how are you?
I'm great. And so are the Bruins. Pump that shit up, man. Pump that shit up. Big Bees fans. Well,
the problem is that the Bruins got bounced by the Canadians, which did not go over too well.
We don't talk about that here. It didn't happen.
P.K. Subban or Zdeno Chara? Discuss.
P.K. Subban, he's a pussy. all right.
Both sound delicious.
As you heard, placetobenation.com, the awesome World Cup of TV characters, which I was told I no-sold. Bunch of freaking crybabies, Brad Woodley. It is an awesome tournament. Continue to vote. It is fantastic. There's been some upsets. In fact, today... What was today's let's look at today's character matchups.
I don't think I looked at today's yet.
Stretching today's character time. Matchups we had Lucy Ricardo against Jack Tripper.
Oh yeah, that's right.
That's a no-brainer. Let's see the score right now.
It was Jack Tripper.
Three's Company.
Three's Company.
Oh, okay.
And
shouldn't be close.
Well, it is. Lucy Ricardo's leading 35-32. Kevin Arnold and Lenny Briscoe. Oh, it's a tough one. Love both shows. I got to go with Kevin Arnold. And he's up big.
Is that the Briscoe Brothers' lost cousin?
No, it's the Briscoe that does the carburetors at Briscoe Brothers' garage.
Oh, she does the muffler all right.
Spock and Tracy Jordan from 30 Rock, and Spock is winning easily. This is one that's caused a lot of controversy, guys. Beavis and Screech. A lot of controversy. And at the moment, it is Beavis by 8 votes, 39-31.
By the way, Scott, the Wolves are currently on screen on TNA Impact.
Done changing the channel.
All right. No, Jimmy's gone for the next 45 minutes.
Enjoy Davey while you can.
I mean, if this just gets rid of people, wow. Maybe I should get a Cavaliers game on right now and then Risha leave. No.
Hey, I can multitask. Got the Red Sox game. They're now trailing 7-3 with one out in the seventh. Dean Ambrose is beating the crap out of Seth Rollins on the network. We'll see where TNA's at.
All right. Yesterday's matchups, guys, Barney Stinson, one of my personal favorites, is easily beating up the janitor from Scrubs. It is 50-18.
What a scrub.
What Aww. A scrub. Colbert and the midget from Game of Thrones. I'm actually, believe it or not, guys, what's his name? Tyrion? Is that his name?
Tyrion.
Tyrion.
His real name is Peter Dinklage.
You can tell I don't watch...
That one's odd to me because Stephen Colbert, to me, I mean, he's a real guy. You know, isn't it characters?
And you know what?
On the Colbert Report, Stephen Colbert is a character.
And you know what? It's a one-point matchup. 36-35. Tyrion, whatever his name is winning. Oh, another heartbreaker here. Niles from Frasier and Don Draper.
That's a tough one.
Oh, I hate
Don Draper every time.
Niles is up
Not
by seven.
Not this time.
Niles is up by seven. I love
Frasier. I voted
Frasier.
Don.
God, I love Frasier.
I love Frasier too.
Would win a Scotch contest.
I do love Don. I do love Mad Men. And just because the picture is cool, I'm voting for Eric Cartman over Gob Bluth from Arrested Development. And right now, Cartman is kicking the shit out of Gob. 52-22.
Is that Cartman in his Jack Bauer phase?
No, it's just. I hope you did Gob as a joke because it's Job.
I like Job better.
Job's doing the job.
Job better.
Should get a job.
Hey guys, yeah. On Impact, Mike Tenay is interviewing Dixie Carter in a bed.
Yep, Mike Tenay and Dixie Carter are in bed right now.
Now we realize why Mike Tenay still has a job.
Now I know why they've been getting record high ratings.
Wait, you guys don't like Mike Tenay?
And Thomas Magnum is comfortably ahead of Perry Cox from Scrubs. Poor
another
Gob.
Scrub.
I love Gob. I love Gob.
Dr. Cox is like an all-timer for me.
Yes, I knew it was Job. I just thought Gob was funnier. All right, and so there you go. So keep voting in the PTBN's World Cup of TV Characters on PoliceTVNation.com. Tremendous, tremendous tournament. And let's hope that, we get some good matchups as we move on. All right, back to the discussion at hand. And we've been talking about Sunday and SummerSlam. Let's talk about Bray Wyatt and Chris Jericho. I thought a better match than Battleground. But another feud that seems to have kind of lost its oomph. Or has Chris Jericho run out of oomph? Willie, what do you think?
I was a lot more excited for this than I should have been. I should have known based on the last couple of times Jericho's come back that as much as I love him, and I think I'm on the record of saying he's one of my favorites of all time, just all around characters and ring savvy. I was really excited for him coming back, and I should have known better than the last couple times when he hasn't done as much, really since the Punk feud. And I got my expectations up, and I've been let down the last couple times. And I think you guys mentioned this on Monday too. You know, it might be time for him to go into that legend status where he comes back every once in a while to talk, but maybe not wrestle, especially in high profile matches.
Yeah, that's true. What do you think, Rish?
Well, what's disappointing with Jericho is that, you know, he takes so much pride in the past and dialing in the storyline so that he can amp up his character so that people are more invested in what's going on with the storyline. And they've done a couple of segments back, you know, interviews back and forth with Wyatt and Jericho. They had the one where they sat down and talked and all that stuff. But the problem is that, like you were saying, it's lost a little bit of its luster. I think that with Jericho, I think we've seen this story before, and I think at this point we're not really buying into it. And you know, the other problem I really had with that match was that, you know, you do sports like we always say, and we the one thing that we all know about sports standings is that there's being the best of the best, you know, the elite, and then there's the bottom feeders, the ones that are awful and terrible all the time. But the one thing you really don't want to be, that's kind of the limbo. You don't want to be in the middle. You don't want to be just forgettable. Because if you're forgettable, then it just passes on by. No one's going to give you credit for what you did, even though you're not doing anything terrible. And you just become just another statistic. And that was the disappointing part about Wyatt and Jericho. It was just another match. And that's the worst thing you want to be in the WWE right now with the talent level they have. Because everybody's whooping ass, even all the way to the bottom on the opening part of the show. And to have just another match with a name like Chris Jericho, it's disappointing. But I don't know how much blame to put on him in comparison to Wyatt. It's very tough.
Yeah, I don't think there should be a third match. There probably is going to be. I think you, JD, said it in the last segment that everything's got to have a rubber match. Everything's got to be a best of three series instead of just ending and moving on. Because fans really don't give a shit about best of threes and who wins more than the other. We're not in the 1980s anymore in that aspect. But Bray Wyatt's in a funny spot because I think a lot of people think, kind of like Dean Ambrose, that he's bulletproof. But sadly, I don't think he is.
No.
No, he's not.
He needs to get something back in a feud here.
So from my perspective, Bray Wyatt has lost a lot of steam since WrestleMania, and I go back even further than that.
When has this guy had a good singles match?
Daniel Bryan at the Rumble.
Daniel Bryan
the last
at the Rumble.
Really, really good.
I thought the Last Man Standing match with John Cena was very good.
That's two. Okay, he's been working singles for about a year now, and you've got two on a big stage of him having strong matches.
Yeah, you know, it's funny.
At what point do we look at Bray Wyatt, the in-ring performer, and say he's got the great entrance, he cuts the awesome promos, but you know what? 10, 15, 20-minute matches, not his thing. Yeah. And the other element to this is he needs the family behind him doing their thing.
Yeah.
Well, here's a funny thing.
I hated the fact that the Wyatt family were lumberjacks. And by the way, poor lumberjacks at that. In that match, like, the Wyatt family should be special. They should be different, much in the same way that the Shield would come out through the crowd. Like, Bray Wyatt isn't being protected well because he's just, his in-ring work isn't there yet, I don't think.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Well, I think it's the same thing with going back to Dean Ambrose, where I think they fixed the problems with him is where they need to address the problems with Wyatt. He's heavy on character work, which doesn't always translate to exciting matches. I think what really didn't help is that they went on after the Rollins and Ambrose match.
Oh, sure.
You know, and have a 13-minute match.
That's a tough follow, yeah.
Yeah, you know, maybe just flip that or flip those two matches around. We wouldn't be so down on it. But I think they do need to address Wyatt when the bell rings.
That match was 10:52.
Yeah, I was just looking that up, too.
Yeah, it was the only one outside of Reigns, Orton, and Cena, Lesnar that went over 10 minutes.
It went over 10 minutes. No. I'm talking about Rollins. Ambrose was only 10 minutes, 10:52. Yeah. It felt longer.
Just barely, yeah.
It felt longer.
Do you know what Bray Wyatt is, by the way? Is Bray Wyatt a good guy? Is he a bad guy?
No, he's a bad guy.
What is he right
now? No, he's a bad guy.
Then why is he singing with the crowd?
Well, that's the crowd's full problem. No, I'm just kidding. But they're not making, they're not changing.
They're hijacking.
It's kind of like, yeah, well, that's true. Here's the case here. It's funny you bring that up, Jimmy, because it reminds me kind of Randy Savage 1987. Savage didn't change the way he acted. They just changed the opponents. Oh, wow. House shows facing Hogan. Won the title, facing Hogan, lost to Steamboat. Then all of a sudden, like August or September, suddenly he's fighting Butch Reed and who are some other
Bret Hart.
Bret and, Bob Orton. And we're like, what the hell is he facing all these bad guys for? And suddenly he's getting cheered. Bray Wyatt, it's almost the same thing. He starts facing other heels. He'll get cheered. But here's my thing about that match. And you, I think it was you, Jimmy, that brought it up. Without Rowan and Harper, I thought that in particular, they were really going to focus this match on a, like, all right, Bray, the stage is yours. Because Harper and Rowan did nothing in the, they didn't involve themselves in the Daniel Bryan match either. And we had a, four-star match.
Yeah, they got thrown out, yeah.
Yeah, so we had a four-star match. 4.5. And I was expecting that as well. And it just didn't happen. And I think kind of like RVD, I just think that Jericho's lost that twinkle. Mm-hmm. He really has. I think he's just lost that sparkle that he always used to have. And he's just kind of there. He's like RVD. RVD used to be everybody's, sparkle. And now he's just there.
But is that the performer in this case, or is that we've seen these guys for so long?
I think it's
and
both.
They haven't kind of adjusted. And
yeah,
done
I think
something
it's both.
Different.
I think it's both. I think Jericho's just. I think he just came here because he has nothing better to do and wanted to make an easy buck.
I think Jericho wanted to do this story, and I think that it's taken a back seat. And again, I don't think Bray is the in-ring worker that maybe we were led to believe that he's this great all-around performer.
I don't know if he's, go ahead, Steve. No, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know if he's. I mean, we've seen him before. We've seen him as Husky Harris. I don't think that we've ever really thought he's that good of an in-ring performer. I think that his character work is so good, and that's why he's getting such the big push. But, when you put him out there for 13 minutes with Jericho, as they did, and it's not working, and you put him out there with Cena a couple times, and it worked more because of the stipulations and because of Harper and Rowan there with him, as the whole package. You know, I don't know more what you're going to get more out of him at this point, besides you know, the great character work. He's never going to be a Jericho in his prime, or you know, even a Lesnar or something like that. He's not someone.
So maybe he should be the manager in tights then.
Well, yeah, and
you know, I think an issue that could be part of the problem is Steve said it, I said it. Wyatt is a character. Mm-hmm. And when you're more doing character work than actual wrestling, Daniel Bryan doesn't need help. Daniel Bryan's a great wrestler. The announcers need to help Bray Wyatt, and the announce team is awful. You know, and
that's not their fault though.
Yeah, but still, I think that you know, when it's really heavy on the storytelling so much more than the moves, then the announcers need to add to that. And I don't really recall if they were good or bad during the Wyatt Jericho match. I'm just gonna guess they were bad.
Hold on, Jimmy. What do you mean? It's whose fault? It's not the announcer's fault?
No, because they are given
they're sticking to the script, is what he's saying.
A run sheet, and so if it's Jericho versus Bray Wyatt, you've got to hit the Twitter, you've got to hit this, you've got to hit this storyline.
$9.99,
yeah. Well, exactly. That stuff,
and the match in the ring. And it's been this way for a long time. The match in the ring is almost secondary. I remember Joey Styles was called in to do a Taboo Tuesday, and he was totally cold off the street. And what he knows is calling a wrestling match in the ring. And he had one of the great calls that ultimately got him a job between Ric Flair and Triple H. And he didn't have any of those check boxes in front of him, or he didn't care about them. And that's something that they need more of, is putting the emphasis on wrestler X versus wrestler Y, and that's the story in front of you.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think that's especially important in a guy like Bray Wyatt. You know, Ambrose and Rollins, they can get going so crazy with all the spots that you tune the announcers out. But a Wyatt match is going to be more slow and plotting and building to a spot rather than spot, you know. And that's where the announcers really need to carry a little bit of the weight to get over Wyatt slow, over why he's skulking around. Yeah. I mean, I'm not saying, you know, if you throw Jim Ross in there, that it would have been a 4.5-star match. But it might have helped.
But there were times where Jim Ross was caught up in the match, and he would say pretty much, story be damned, we got something going on here. And whether he said it or not, you could tell by how he was verbalizing and broadcasting the match that it was, King, you get on board with this, or Taz, you get on board with this, or Mick Foley, you get on board with this, because I'm calling this match, everything else be damned.
Yeah, and I think that's what it comes down to, because Jim Ross is just good at what he does. Jimmy, I think the point here, too, regardless of what those guys are handing them, they're even sucking at that. It's just they're just not. JBL, at least at times, is trying to put over the heel side of things. I love Jerry Lawler. He's a Hall of Famer. We're glad he didn't die on it on the air, but he's just completely and utterly useless now. What does he bring to the table? Once every 7 Raws, he goes in the ring to officially announce the vote of a stipulation that all 3 are the same except they're worded differently. That irked me more than anything on Monday night. Let's do this: no DQ, no holds barred, last man standing. They're the same friggin' match. But we're all just stupid, and because they all look the same.
Can I throw in one point about Bray Wyatt?
They should have blinked $9.99 all over the phone. Maybe that would have helped or something. Anyway, go ahead, Reach, and then we'll move on to the next.
Just a quick one, and then we'll get out of here. Is that I think he's kind of in the same spot that The Undertaker was when he was kind of in the mid-90s, where the character was super over. I mean, different era, different times, I understand that. But he was at a point where the character was over, and he could just use that to make his matches. He was having terrible matches, but you knew that he was capable of doing more. And I think, Mark Calloway, The Undertaker, realized, okay, I got to amp my game up. I got to get my work ethic up in order to stay with these guys. And I think as the years went by, he developed that work ethic. He developed that ability to run things in the ring. I think Bray Wyatt hasn't done that yet.
I think the other point of that, too, though, Rish, is in 1995, I think Taker was about to quit because the roster sucked, and he was tired of the click, and he was ready to quit. And the guy that saved him and saved the WWE was Mick Foley. It wasn't really him upping his work ethic. It was him realizing, oh, my God, this guy's going to push me I got to catch up with him in terms of.
And that's what Bray Wyatt needs. Bray Wyatt needs another guy.
Bray Wyatt needs a Mankind.
Yes.
Bray Wyatt needs a Mankind. I don't know where we'll find it, but.
Or he needs an Undertaker. Or he needs an Undertaker so he can be Mankind.
Or he just needs Daniel Bryan back.
Yeah.
Taker Bray. Wait a minute. That's another topic for another day, because now Taker can come in with that I've lost it, you know. Maybe we can even use breaking the streak works both ways. Beating Taker works for Brock Lesnar, as we'll talk about in a minute. But maybe not having the streak anymore opens up other opportunities for Taker if he's healthy enough to go again. Because Bray Wyatt's going to need a WrestleMania opponent. Interesting.
One last comment before we move on to the next thing.
Yeah.
On TNA, I'm pretty sure James Storm is going to rape Sonata.
All right, yeah. First of all, James Storm is awesome. Secondly, who the hell is Sonata?
He's from Wrestling. He's one of the stars of the Great Moodist promotion, Wrestling.
They're doing a scene where Sonata is like tied up in a shed, and James Storm is stroking. Yeah, it's a man. And James Storm is stroking his face, and it's really. I don't have the volume on. But just from what I'm seeing, it does not look good.
He was mostly naked as well.
Yeah.
Hyde and Wright Cole too?
Is it creepier than Hyde and Wright Cole? I don't know if James Storm is eloquent enough to fire off a good poem, but
nobody can drink with the best of them.
That's true. All right, let's move on to one of my favorite moments of the night, and that was the awesome Andre-ish heel turn of Nikki Bella. You should have just ripped the cross right off of Brie, and
you're bleeding.
What are you doing, man?
you're bleeding. Yeah, you got to say it the Piper way. You're bleeding. Yeah, kind of like Quint on Jaws.
Impression's not my thing.
Yeah. So Stephanie McMahon wins because she's awesome, even in her Diesel outfit, and not saying Diesel like awesome. Diesel like Diesel.
Like China outfit.
Like Diesel.
Yeah. It looked like Molly Holly, Mighty Molly without the cape.
No, you know what? If it was China, we would have had the peacock feathers like she had at Backlash 2001. That would have been kind
of
neat.
But you know that came out of Triple H's closet.
No, I really think it came out of Kevin Nash's closet, unless Kevin Nash gave it to Triple H. In any event, she wins, and then she comes out Monday in that awesome, which I'm getting that t-shirt, by the way. Not hers, because that's the woman's one. But I'm getting the Steph t-shirt, because it's pretty
deep cut.
Yeah, no, it wouldn't really work on me, like for Steph.
Peacock in Triple H's closet?
Was this the right way to go, Jimmy?
Yeah, Stephanie runs the company. I don't care for the Nikki Brie Bella turn, but I think that the E! Network wanted it because they want to do Total Divas Season 4, and if they can build it around sister-on-sister feud. The one thing that I noticed, and I didn't notice it until they actually got in the ring together, was how much bigger Stephanie was than Brie Bella. And Stephanie should have destroyed Brie Bella just based on size.
Right.
They didn't really establish Brie very well as Daniel Bryan's wrestling wife. So I kind of went in there and thought, well, Brie should kick Stephanie's tail, but Stephanie just looks so much more daunting and so much more intimidating. So, yes, they made the right choice with Stephanie winning. The Nikki Bella heel turn doesn't do anything for me, but, I mean, I'm used to Brett versus Owen as far as sibling rivalries, and I don't think that they'll come close to that match quality.
No, you don't think, huh?
Did you say season
four? That's quite a statement, Jimmy.
Wait, did you say season four of Total Divas?
Well, they just finished up taping season 3.
Someone's going to be furious.
I thought it was only season... Not that I care, but... Willie, what do you think? Was Stephanie winning the right way to go?
It was the right way to go in terms of wrestling. It was because of... It would be pretty unbelievable for Brie to have won that. It was very... I don't really care for where it's going to go from here, because now what? And if we have, you know, the whole point of Total Divas is it's behind the scene reality. You know, this is obviously not reality, that the fact that they're feuding like this. So if it was the E! Network saying that they want them to feud, it's a, you know, pretty crappy idea for a reality show, you know, completely fake. Wait, that's all reality shows, isn't it?
Yes, I agree. And I mean, first off, Daniel Bryan has hideous taste in women, because that physical therapist, ooh, she's a dog. I think the chick that Taker was.
Did you read the comments by Daniel Bryan, by the way, about how it's just kind of one of those things?
Yeah, he said his exact words were stupid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he looks like the piece. He's not even in the storyline, and he looks like the asshole.
Like,
that's even
like Randy Orton would say, stupid.
Or as
I think Daniel Bryan doesn't care, because I think Daniel Bryan's done, but that's a topic we can get to later.
You mean done like forever?
Yes.
That is another topic for another day. For those that don't know, came out today that he needs Tommy John surgery, so take him off your fantasy teams, and he'll be gone another 3 months. I think that Stephanie winning is because I think they just wanted to re-tie together the bow that the authority is the authority, so I think they wanted all of them to look good last night when Raw started, and who cares if Brie Bella wins, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
And a Brie versus Nikki match is definitely not Brett. No, and I agree with you on that, Jimmy. All right, let's move on to the match that I thought was going to be the match of the night, my sleeper match. I was really crossing all my fingers and toes that Roman Reigns and Randy Orton were going to put on a four-star match. I really did. And they didn't. It wasn't terrible. I'd say it was like 2.5 probably. I figured out what's... I think I figured out what's wrong with Roman Reigns, and it's not his selling. Everybody thinks he doesn't sell. Everybody sells well. If you fall down and go, ow, you're selling. Obviously, there's levels of that, but that's pretty much the gist of it. Roman Reigns' problem is, and this reminds me a lot of... Justin's been using the Ultimate Warrior comparison, and it's a very good one. Roman Reigns has three major moves. He's got the Superman punch, he's got that sweet apron kick, and he's got the spear. The problem is he doesn't know what to do in between those things. I always said the same thing about RVD. RVD's got his Rolling Thunder, the Froggy, all these other things. He spends the rest of the time kind of throwing half-assed forearms and kind of rolling around a lot. Roman Reigns kind of has the same problem. He has no bridges in his work rate to get from one move to the other. And that was a huge glaring problem in this match with Randy Orton. Orton was on fire in this match. He hit a sweet RKO off the bounce, off of Reigns was going. What was he jumping off? How did that work again? Was he going for the spear?
He was going for the spear, and he kind of just sprung in the air to set up the RKO.
And he caught. Yeah, it still looked great though.
I thought he was going for a Superman punch for the RKO.
Oh, he was going for the Superman punch, yeah. Because
the spear was the power slam, and the Superman
which
punch
that was awesome.
The
which
RKO.
I was, thank you, Jimmy.
Power slam was awesome.
Mentioned. The power
which
slam,
woke us all up for that match.
Yeah. That's my issue with Roman Reigns. Everybody says Randy Orton's like torpedoing his push. That's bullshit, because Triple H is no dummy. I think he would notice something like that. So I don't think that's the case. I honestly don't think that's the case. I think
Randy Orton right now is their Ted DiBiase.
In what way?
In the way that Ted DiBiase was kind of the guy who would work with either the main event guy in Hulk Hogan or the next guy who is getting there, or your Jake Roberts. He's the guy who's going to say, you know what, this guy's really got it, or this guy's developing, or that's who this guy is. I mean, to a much higher scale than Steve Lombardi was, or somebody of that type, the Terry Taylor, the mechanic almost. Like, that's what Randy Orton is right now. He's your main event mechanic.
The only issue is I think right now with the crowds, they treat him more like he's Ted DiBiase Jr. than Ted DiBiase.
Well, not at SummerSlam.
The last 5 minutes, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But they're telling a slower-paced story, and then they amp it up. And I am by no means a Randy Orton fan at all. Like, he does nothing for me. But I think that's his role right now. Is I was mentioning before about Alberto Del Rio had a certain role about making making people look good. Ted DiBiase's job was to make people look good. Jake Roberts, the same thing. And that's kind of Randy Orton's spot right now. Is he's supposed to make, in this case, Roman Reigns look really good.
Okay. Breesh, what are your thoughts?
Well, Jimmy makes a good point. He's kind of like a gatekeeper. You know, it's he's like the big boss before you get to the big boss in the video game. You know, he's a big deal. He always will be as long as he's in the WWE. But I think he is in a point of transition where his job is to, like he said, be a mechanic in a main event level and kind of help along these guys so that they can help continue their push. I think you make a good point about Roman Reigns that we had made when he wrestled at Battleground, that he needs to work on his entire offense so that his matches can flow easier, because as a babyface, you have to do a little bit more to carry yourself from spot to spot. You can't just lay around and have the other guy be on the defensive while you're just doing one or two or three moves. That gets really boring really fast, and I could feel the crowd sort of turning just a little bit in the last few minutes of that match. But I do think that there is something going on going forward with Orton where they're doing a slow turn back to babyface, where, because I saw him after the match where they did the vignette where he's out there and he's kind of looking forlorn, and Flair comes in and goes, "Hey man, you know, get your head up." And I think that's one of those things that where Randy Orton's saying, "I don't need anybody," and he's trying to get that sort of Steve Austin heat where the fans get behind him because he doesn't want the authorities help anymore. And I think
they did that at Money in the Bank too.
What's that?
They did that at Money in the Bank too, where after Seth Rollins wins, he cuts the interview with, I think it was Renee Young, and says, "I don't need to win like Seth Rollins needs to win."
Yeah. Mm.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And I think that's going forward in the future. But the match was very good. I wouldn't call it bad.
Now, Rish, now, based on your comparison, is Randy Orton more like Bald Bull, or is he like Soda Popinski?
No.
Or is he Super Macho Man?
No, that would be it.
Super
would be
Macho Man was the last one before Mike Tyson.
No, yeah. It's the gatekeeper and the keymaster. So so Randy Orton is Sigourney Weaver. Right.
So Roman Reigns is Rick Moranis.
So Randy Orton's Vince Clortho?
There is no
way. Of the Valdrani.
I'm the key master.
Are you Zool?
Rest in peace, Harold Ramis.
What a great tag team, Zool and Gozer. No. Yeah, I like the comparison Jimmy made, as he is the gatekeeper. I mean, he's won enough championships. He's always there. I love the. I liked he kind of switched tights. I don't think he's worn something other than black in like 6 or 7 years. So kind of dug the gray tights.
He had blue a couple months ago.
Yeah, they went all blue.
He did. I mentioned that too. He did wear the blue a couple months ago. Yeah, he did. He needs to find Triple H's old purple tights from 2003. Those would look pretty cool.
No, that's not a good idea.
Yes, it is a good idea. Shut up.
Randy Orton, 12 times the world champion.
Yeah.
12.
12. Him, Cena, and Triple H are combined over 40, I guess, right?
Another guy that already retired that had a ton of title reigns was Edge.
Edge had, I think, well,
10.
Singles was 10, yeah. Overall, he had, like, what, 29 or something, if you count all the tags and the ICs and all
it's
that.
It's like Bully Ray, like, retarded with the title reign.
All right, let me ask you this. Let me ask everybody this. I'll start with you, Willie. What do you do with Roman Reigns from here, say, through... What do you do with Night of Champions with him? What's the next step now?
Well, and I'm with Jimmy that, and I'm not a big Roman Reigns guy. And I kind of building off what you said, Scott, that he is a guy who really flourished, kind of like we were talking about Bray earlier on, when there were two other guys on his side and he was in these big six-man matches or tag team matches. So now he has to build up. I'm worried that they are going to push him too fast and he's not ready for it. So he needs to get into the ring, kind of like we were saying with Bray, with a bunch of different guys, learn different styles, learn what to do in those in-between moments between his, like you said, three big moves. So he can be able to carry 10, 15-minute matches, because if they're going to be pushing him, he's going to be having 20, 25-minute matches. If,
right.
You know, the people talking that he's going to WrestleMania, and, you know, the match, you know, that was put on in the typical women's diva match right before the main event. That was almost a throwaway match there. It wasn't. It was in between the two big matches they were pushing, between Brock, Cena, and then Stephanie Brie. Those were the two matches they were pushing the most, and then they kind of sandwiched in Roman Orton in between it. So where to go next with him? I hope it's not just throw him in another match with Randy Orton, but it looks like that's where they might be going.
Certainly hope not. But yeah. Again, we're in a situation where, and we'll talk about it now, where the main event dictated everything for this show. And now the mid card needs to be sculpted so we have something to give a crap about over the next, you know, 4 months, because our champion will not be on every month.
We have to give a crap now.
Yeah. Brock Lesnar.
Let me just bring this up about Roman Reigns real quick.
Yeah, I got something to say about him, too.
You're trying to get him to WrestleMania, right? So on my 1,000 post-it notes here, you got Night of Champions, you do Randy Orton in a stipulation match, Hell in a Cell, you either do Randy Orton in a Hell in a Cell match, or you do Triple H in a Hell in a Cell match, and you work the feud backwards. Survivor Series, you do Triple H. TLC, you do Triple H. And then you have the Rumble. Elimination Chamber is a bridge show where maybe it's Triple H again or Randy Orton again, depending on where they are. And then you're at WrestleMania. And, yeah, it's kind of boring that I've only got two other opponents for him. But if they're doing three-match series, then that's kind of the way that they're going. They only have to fill Orton in a stip is another one. Triple H for three. You're at the Rumble, and then Elimination Chamber. You put him in some gauntlet match for his WrestleMania title shot, and then you're at WrestleMania with Brock Lesnar, presumably.
Yeah, the problem is – well, go ahead, actually, JD. You said you had a point. Go ahead.
Yeah, I think people are putting the blame on Roman Reigns, and I think it's on the booking of Roman Reigns. Good booking is when a guy has limitations and we as the fans don't recognize it. In The Shield, we never saw these limitations that we see now. And I think the issue is – I guess the term is main event style or WWE style. The reason Roman Reigns – got so popular with the fans is he was different. And now they're booking him just like they'd book John Cena.
Just like everyone else. They're kind of vilifying him.
Well, they had certain elements to each of them respectively, and Reigns was
well,
power.
I'm talking even after they split for a little bit, when he was just coming out and killing people for a little bit. You know, yeah, he's only got three moves. So did Goldberg. Yep. You know, I think the answer is you book him like Goldberg. You don't book him like John Cena, because he's not John Cena. You know, every babyface doesn't have to be John Cena, and every heel doesn't have to be a coward. And I think if they would just give guys, you know, they have this philosophy that this is our main babyface, so he has to be like this. Well, rather than changing your booking for the guy, you know, they try to change the guy for their booking. Yeah. And they need to book around who he is rather than make him change for what they want to book.
That's what they did to Diesel.
Yeah. Right. I think every heel's a coward, but I don't think the next one is.
No. And that's why he's so different. You know, it works that way. I think you can easily book him in a Goldberg route. And by the way, if you book him like Goldberg and you book Brock Lesnar like Brock Lesnar, then when Goldberg 2 steps in the ring with Brock Lesnar, it's a big deal.
True.
But if you got a guy who's been in 20-minute matches, then none of them are very good, and then he steps in with Brock Lesnar, cool, I guess. Mm-hmm.
I think Brock Lesnar beats him.
Of course.
You know.
That's how I would have Brock Lesnar go over at WrestleMania 31, absolutely.
Right. If they don't think he's ready, then don't do it yet.
If they don't think he's ready, then don't even put him in the match.
We're gonna get the challengers at the tail end of this one, so.
Right. But I think the biggest issue is that watching that match, that felt like you could take Roman Reigns out of it, put John Cena in it, it'd be the same thing. And I think that's the issue. He's not like John Cena, and that's why he got popular in the first place, because he's not like John Cena. And if they try to make him like John Cena, fans aren't going to respond to that very well.
That's where the WWE formula hurts you.
Mm-hmm. That's why Dean Ambrose is so popular, because he's not like the other guys.
You know, on a side note, you've mentioned often, Jimmy, tonight about the lousy Lumberjacks. I just realized why the Lumberjacks were so lousy.
Because they're booked poorly?
Because Bo Dallas was one of them. All right.
The most disappointing one was Damian Sandow, because he was dressed like an actual lumberjack.
No, the most disappointing one was Bo Dallas because he exists. All right, let's go to the main event, as I started to mention. 16 minutes and 6 seconds, Brock Lesnar was on offense for about 15 minutes and 48 seconds of it. Sans the 20 seconds that Cena
Let's
was in the...
Let's go, Cena!
Have some wine. Okay. but, you know, JD, think about it, though. Wasn't it fitting?
Oh, that made the match even better.
Even the chicks in the crowd thought Cena was going to get his ass kicked.
I almost think that kid could have been a plant, because it just told the story so perfectly. There's that one kid who's just hoping beyond hope that his hero will come back, and he didn't.
With his little, with his little
he's
red
Rick
shirt.
Schroeder in the in the champ.
In his
nice.
Yeah.
I thought I was the only one that mentioned 70s movies. Wow, Reesh.
I got an old soul, buddy.
Yes, you do. And, well, I guess it was better than John Voight's performance in Deliverance. No, that was Ned Beatty that had – never mind. So –
that was what we just saw at James Storm and Sonata.
James Storm and Sonata. Somebody squeal like a pig.
Sonata. I thought Sonata was a chick.
Somebody squealed like a pig in the main event, but I don't think it was Brock Lesnar.
Oh, jeez. Have we ever seen a performance like that out of a guy in a match that long? Ever? I don't think so. I was
what
watching.
What are you talking about? Cena's or Brock's?
Brock's, we'll talk about first. All right. But let me know. Let me change the question because I thought about this.
The closest that I've seen to anything like that dates me to 1987-88, and it wasn't a world heavy. It wasn't a singles match. It was the Road Warriors going against the Midnight Express and coming in and saying, "Bleep you, we're heels now. We yeah, want these titles."
That was 88. And the other cool thing, the other cool feud, you mentioned the Road Warriors in AWA when they were supposed to go over the Fantastics or the Fabulous Ones. I always get those tag teams confused.
Yeah.
The Steve Kern, Stan Lane ones, the ones with the bow ties and the suspenders. They were supposed to win in a DQ, and then the Road Warriors freaking killed them.
I can give you a slight comparison, but it's not the same if you want this one. It's when Shawn Michaels wrestled The Undertaker in 97.
No, that's a good no, but, that is a good comparison.
You can go on. You can go on with your point.
But that's an interesting comparison. I like
the
that.
The reason why it's a little different, though, is because leading into the blow-off at Hell in a Cell, Sean Gott has come up and saw an Undertaker where he would pull the wool over his eyes, hit him with a chair, blah, 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 and it would kind of go back and forth booking-wise leading into the matches where the Undertaker would just destroy Shawn Michaels the entire match. This is different. This is one where Brock did his one or two appearances. He dominated everything. He goes to the birthday celebration with Hulk Hogan, tells him, "Party's over, Grandpa," and everybody's scared to death of him. And then he goes into the main event, and John Cena doesn't even get an inch of offense. He just fucking dominates him.
Yeah.
And it was almost like a UFC fight where it goes for three or four rounds, and the champion is just so much better than the challenger. And now, you're like, oh, man, this is going to be ugly.
Now, before we get into my whole point about Lesnar, if you go back through the history books, and Willie, I'll start with you, and we'll go from there. You go through the history books. Name me one in his prime babyface, and a lot of people think Cena's not in his prime anymore. Cena will always be in his prime until he's not here anymore. Name me one babyface in his prime that would allow himself to put over a heel that dominant. Would Hulk Hogan, and everyone says, well, Hogan did it in 02. Yeah, but that was 02, not 1985. Hulk Hogan in 1987. Steve Austin in 1999. Shawn Michaels in 1996. Ric Flair in 1987. Any top flight babyface would ever allow themselves to get annihilated like John Cena did Sunday. That guy deserves all the credit in the world for allowing himself to go in there and get thrashed for 16 minutes and 6 seconds when no other guy at the top of a promotion in history would ever have allowed that to happen to him to themselves. There's a guy who cares about this company. And another reason why I'm still not a big Brock Lesnar fan. Because I don't think it would happen in reverse. That's what I think.
But does it matter if it happens in reverse?
Well, Brock's got a big give back somehow. I mean, he can't
well,
be the
Brock's
champion
never
forever.
You don't want Brock to get dominated, but
no.
If you're looking to put someone over, Jimmy, yes. Yes. Sometimes you do have to give it. Why did he leave in 2004?
Because
he didn't
like
to travel. That's a bunch of horse shit.
Well, no, it's actually...
He had his dream.
I used to work with Jermaine Wiggins, who actually played with Brock Lesnar on the Minnesota Vikings during that camp.
Uh-huh.
And he tells some great stories. One of the stories that I am allowed to tell you is that He didn't sell for anybody. They tried to play a prank on him. He wanted nothing to do with it. They had to chase him around the practice field to get to play this prank on him. And all they wanted to do, they wanted to give him a whiffle. So he doesn't play with anybody.
No.
And wrestling is in the business to make money. And with Hulk Hogan, how much did Hulk give when he was on top?
That's my right.
So how much does Brock Lesnar have to give if he's going to be the top dog?
Well, John Cena set a new template now. He's in my opinion, he's changed the scope of
he's won in 60 years.
You know, I think the only other one that you could say maybe is The Rock. I could see The Rock laying down pretty I could see Rock. I don't know about that bad of a beating, but Rock put a lot of people over when he didn't have to.
Rock was maybe the most losingest WWE champion of all time.
Yeah. I wrote about that, about transitional champions with Cena, and Rock was a transitional champion almost all the time. He never really got a signature run because he was always there at the service of moving the storyline with the belt.
But I can just picture Rock taking those German suplexes and grabbing his head like he would always do when he would take those back suplexes.
Well, you might see that in about 6 months.
You know how you'd do that? When he'd go for that back suplex, he'd grab his head on the way down before he even hit the ground.
Yes.
But I guess getting back to the point about Brock Lesnar giving back, if it's Roman Reigns who he loses to at WrestleMania 31, is that enough give back? And I think it is.
Well, he's already lost to Cena, so I guess in that instance. I'm not specifically talking about Brock Lesnar in terms of giving back with a 16-minute.
You mean a hypothetical if they came to Brock and said, Brock, we really want to make this guy a dominant star. Will you take 16 German suplexes and let him kick out of your finish?
The problem is, and Jordan made this point, is that Brock isn't built that way. He's not a coward. He's not a guy that's going to be selling like $1 million like he used to when he was younger, but now he's learned. And it's almost, he's been booked thanks to the SummerSlam main event to a point where he is literally untouchable. Where he, even if the match at Night of Champions is closer, if Brock Lesnar wins, no one's going to believe that the next opponent up is going to take him down. Whether it be Batista, Randy Orton, Sheamus, even Daniel Bryan when he comes back. It's hard to figure one out.
It's true. It is true. And I mean, I have no problem right now with Brock as champion. He is already going to wrestle at Night of Champions. And he's going to dominate Cena again. Everybody who thinks Cena's going to win again then flushes this whole Brock thing down the toilet. If Brock's going to be the guy in San Francisco in March or April, whenever the hell it is, he can't lose between now and then. No. So Cena's not going to get the win back at Night of Champions. It's just not going to happen.
I think the best thing they could do with the Cena match is Cena puts up a little more fight and maybe finds a weakness. And then going forward, people have a small hope. There's a weakness, and that's the only thing they target, but it's not enough.
Like they used to rake Zeus's eyes?
Well, the example I gave on Facebook was like King Hippo from the old Punch-Out games.
Hit him in the gut.
And you have to hit him in the belly, and once you do that, then he's vulnerable. But if you don't do that, you can't hurt him. You know?
Love all the Punch-Out references tonight. So awesome.
And hit Brock in the gut because he had diverticulitis. So, that's his weak spot. Sure.
Well, they did that in the CM Punk match. In the CM Punk match, he kept going after the abdomen.
Yeah.
And I remember that.
I think that's what the Cena match should be. Same outcome, but maybe Cena finds a hope spot,
I really think that – honestly, and this will be our last point before we wrap up. I really do think that deep down for the company, Roman Reigns is plan B. Mm-hmm. Because I still think, honestly, CM Punk is plan A.
Do you?
Yeah.
I
really think that they've got the rest of the year to really bore in his head. You want to be a star. You bitch and moan. How about coming out at number 27 at in Philadelphia?
I think it's Daniel Bryan, man.
Well, Scott, I want you to do the rev up.
Because I hate to say this because I'm kind of leaning with Jimmy on this. I think he's done.
Yeah.
I think that he could be, but I don't think they know. So I think that's their plan A. If he's not done, and if he is, then they go to plan B.
Scott, I know you say these names the best, so I want you to say them. Brock Lesnar's name.
Oh, the way I do it in the vaults?
Yeah.
The Vince McMahon way? All right.
Yeah.
Brock Lesnar!
Versus the other Vince guy that you do.
You mean your dream match?
Yeah. Brock! That's plan A. That is Vince's plan A.
No, that's the Andrew Reich wet dream is what it is. Yeah, great. You know what cracks me up, Reich? You're in my camp pissing and moaning about part-timers, and you want WrestleMania 31 to have two part-timers in the main event.
I would hate it, but it's about the numbers. It's like Jimmy said.
But, and this will be
what is best for business?
This is a point we're going to chew on. I want us to chew on for the next couple weeks.
Yeah.
You know what I think would be cool is if we did get Brock and Rock and Brock beats him too.
Oh, that'd be fantastic.
Just like that.
I think ultimately, when you describe the kind of main event, it talks about what is WrestleMania. I don't want to get too philosophical because this could be another discussion for another 2 hours.
We're going to be talking about this for 6 months.
Yeah. What is WrestleMania? A standalone festival, a standalone event that you have once a year, kind of like a state fair, or is WrestleMania the biggest of the 12 pay-per-views and you have to continue with storylines? Do you suspend storylines to put on the biggest money match, which I think is Vince's philosophy, or is WrestleMania just the biggest of the 12 big shows and you need to still advance people in storylines, which is Triple H's idea?
I think they do both. Yeah, I think they do both.
I think they do both.
That's why they do the Rumble, you know, and that's why the winner of the Rumble goes on.
Right, but if you do Rock and Brock, you're taking the Vince philosophy of, well, neither of these guys will be around afterwards anyway, so who gives a crap?
Sure, and WrestleMania is the biggest show, but did you, and just to wrap it all up, did you feel like SummerSlam that they had to really amp up their performance because of the network expiration dates?
Yeah.
Yeah,
I think so. You know why? Because the Night of Champions card that they're banking on people renewing for is basically saying, hey, you want to watch SummerSlam again? Because it's all those matches again, you know?
I know. Yeah, I hope they don't.
Sure seems like a lot of rematches, and I'm cool with that because SummerSlam was good. I just think it's interesting that we've been talking about how Night of Champions is going to be this loaded show, and the main event's going to be the same as SummerSlam, and we're probably going to get the same Divas title match. And
what if the difference is that they switch out Randy Orton for Triple H, and it's Triple H and Roman Reigns? Does that make you renew?
And the results might not be as predictable because you still got a lot of ways to go.
Yeah, that might be the case. Anyway, gentlemen, it's been a great recap, recapping SummerSlam that took place on Sunday. Our next special event, Steve Willey, now you've got it in my head, is Night of Champions, which is Sunday night, September 21st, from the Bridgestone Arena in Nashville, Tennessee, home of the Preds. Guys, it's been a pleasure. James Stewart, thank you. Fantastic debut.
You were very. You won't offend me with cash.
You were very punchy and lots of debate. Very impressive. I didn't
embrace
hear
debate.
What'd you say, cash? I didn't hear cash.
Cash, homie.
You are Ted DiBiase, aren't you?
Everybody's got a price.
Usually he has it to give. So,
let me make one more Ted DiBiase comment. How awesome would it have been if Brock ended SummerSlam by taking that towel that Cena had and shoving it in his mouth? I'd never give up towel, just like Ted DiBiase used to do.
Someone tweet that to Paul Heyman ASAP.
That'd be great, right?
They could do it at Night of Champions. We'll be back in a couple weeks. I don't know who we'll have on, but we'll definitely focus, since we'll be closer to Night of Champions. We will talk about the network and the first 6 months. Pros, cons, what they should not do, what they need to do more of, etc. So we'll focus on the network in our next episode. For Steve Willey, Jordan Duncan, Andrew Reich, and James Stewart, I'm Scott Criscolo. You've been in the main event, and even if you're John Cena and you're nothing but blood, urine, and vomit, you were in the main event anyway. Talk to you in 2 weeks.
Okay, so what if Brock Lesnar gets in the main event of WrestleMania, and he finally gives away the title to someone who truly deserves it, and in the main event, we finally all learn to believe?
That's a good idea.
Because...
Every time Reese shuts up, an angel gets its wings.